You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week. We'll talk about bigger federal payments to some Oregon counties, Josephine County's plan to fill two open commission seats, and why Bethel Church is distancing itself from a former minister. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, science, and environment reporter.
Justin, you reported a story involving some controversy around Bethel Church in Reading. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so this last week, Bethel Church leadership acknowledged some allegations of misconduct against a minister, a former minister there, Sean Bowles. So they published a long statement kind of running down their knowledge of these allegations, and they also spoke publicly about it at their Sunday services, which are very large services, if you know about Bethel. They not only acknowledged kind of misconduct by Bowles, but they also spent a lot of time apologizing for their inaction and not really bringing this to light sooner. So there's really two parts of these allegations. The first is that Bowles misled church attendees when he would perform these acts of prophetic ministry. So I watched a lot of footage of Bowles doing this, so I can kind of explain it to you. So he'll sort of choose someone in the crowd at one of his services, which, you know, also are packed. He's a very popular minister, and he'll tell this person, like, personal details about their lives. It sounds a lot like when a psychic will do this for a crowd. He'll bring up a word or a name, and then he'll ask its significance, and that, you know, most often will be like their relative's name or street they live on. Anyways, he's accused of basically mining social media for this act. So it's claimed he's getting information from staff through an earpiece and they're just feeding him this stuff. And he passes it off as a miraculous insight, as prophetic ministry. So Bethel leadership said they became aware of this actually back in 2019 when European church partners brought this up. And they confronted him at the time, but they hadn't gone public until now.
And this will, just to kind of clarify, you know, this is stuff like he'll know a person's name, like, is there a Justin in the crowd? And say things like, well, I'm seen in Old Farm. And then you might say, well, I used to live on Old Farm Road. And
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the allegation is that someone's looking up the person's Facebook or something like that and getting that information.
And because many of the times they're registered participants because it's at a conference or.
Right. Right. He'll know their names.
OK, well, that's one allegation, false prophecies. What are the other allegations the church has acknowledged?
So the other allegations involve sexual misconduct and harassment against his employees. So kind of depending on how you look at it, maybe it's the more serious allegation. Bethel Church leaders said they became aware of this also in 2019 when a former staff member of Bowles reached out to them. And these allegations involve Bowles, you know, being naked around his staff quite often, also forcing them to experience some unwanted sexual acts when they shared a space like a hotel room. And it's important to note that, you know, these people came forward and spoke about the people who came forward and spoke about this inappropriate behavior, they're employees of Bowles, but they're also, you know, kind of spiritual followers of Bowles. So Bowles is their minister. So there's an especially sensitive kind of power dynamic there. It can be especially harmful. Bethel said they stopped platforming Bowles in 2019 when these things came to light. But again, they didn't warn anyone about this alleged behavior.
They didn't issue a statement then?
Right. They didn't issue a statement then, and they're only now coming forward with this, you know, 5 or 6 years later. So I reached out to Bowles. He didn't respond to a request for comment, but his website says he's on sabbatical right now.
And for those unfamiliar with Bethel Church, can you tell us a little bit about it? My understanding is it's pretty influential in Reading and maybe kind of throughout certain parts of the Christian world too.
Yeah, so Bethel has become a really important part of Reading culture and even politics. We've reported on that in the past. It's sometimes grouped into this movement described as the new apostolic reformation. I'm not saying that word right, but
it's okay.
Yeah, also neo-charismatic. It's a really big church. They claim over 10,000 members. And, you know, they're known for having a very successful Christian music label. They have their own music school and cultivate artists. Within Christian music, at least, it's a pretty big deal to be on the Bethel label. They also have this school of supernatural ministry, which attracts students from really around the world. So we've reported on Bethel in the past because some have been critical over the church or church members' influence in local politics, especially city council. You know, this church is influential. They have a really big online presence, too. They stream all their services. So it's really become a big institution within Reading.
So we mentioned it's been 5-6 years since some of these allegations, you know, were first reported to the church. What prompted church leadership to speak publicly about this now?
Well, yeah, like you mentioned, there've been allegations about Bowles for quite a time, especially this allegation that he's tricking people with these hacks during his service. And sometimes randomly I'll end up on kind of Christian media sites and blogs. And I remember seeing this stuff in the past, but it seems like Bethel felt really compelled to speak about it more publicly because of this video expose by Christian YouTuber Mike Winger. So Mike Winger released this nearly 6-hour-long video going through all of these allegations against Bowles. He says he's spoken with 3 former employees of Bowles. And that video got a lot of attention, a lot of views, and I think that prompted Bethel to finally become public about their knowledge.
And we don't report on every church around here. Why did you think reporting this story in particular was important?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, I've known about some of these allegations against Bowles. They rung a bell, but I don't, you know, necessarily see our role here as going around debunking religious movements necessarily. And I'm not sure how important, you know, this church drama, even though it's a large church, can be to your average listener. But I decided to report on this story now because first these allegations of sexual harassment were made public, and that was new, and that seemed serious. Also, Bethel Church actually came out and talked about these things publicly. So I found that newsworthy. This church, like I mentioned, is an important institution in Reading and in our region. So this sort of drama that was playing out behind the scenes, you know, mostly on Christian media and blogs, actually, you know, finally broke open, and it provided an opportunity to report on this. But, you know, it brings up interesting questions for me about this religious movement Bethel is a part of. And there's certainly YouTubers and other, you know, writers and bloggers that are covering this kind of subculture very closely.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin. Roman, you've been following the latest in the Josephine County Board of Commissioners shakeup. What's going on there? It's hard to keep track sometimes.
I know. So we've had 2 major events this week in Josephine County. The first is that Commissioner Chris Barnett resigned on Monday. He was recalled by voters on January 6th, but he wasn't kicked out until the election was certified, which was on Wednesday. So he quit before then. He said and claimed that he quit for personal safety reasons, saying there's security incidents at the county offices and not related to the recall. But, you know,
it came
convenient
just
timing.
Before.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had the first meeting of a temporary board of commissioners to meet to fill the 2 vacancies on this 3-person board. Right now, only Ron Smith remains on the board, so there's no quorum and they can't do any county business. So this temporary board is made up of the other elected officials like the sheriff and the clerk and the treasurer. And so they've met to begin this appointment process.
Okay, well, let's turn back the clock a little bit. And how did we get to this temporary board?
Yeah, and it's a lot. I mean, if you know, I think—
How far back do we go?
Exactly. If you really want to get to the bottom of things, I think you really need to go back to at least 2024. Back then, Commissioner Dan DeYoung at the time had faced an internal investigation that found he violated the county's sexual harassment policy. He stepped down from the commission then, and then in his place, the commissioners appointed Andreas Bleck to the board. He was this newcomer. He wasn't a previous commissioner, and he only filled that seat from July to January when that got filled by an election. So, you know, then as that stuff was going on, some residents were getting frustrated by one of the other commissioners, John West. They didn't like his financial decisions, including defunding the University Extension Service and other things. So they started a recall, and that election happened that December. He was overwhelmingly recalled, but he wasn't kicked out until the recall was certified, which didn't happen until January, just like it, you know. And so in the interim, he pushed through an effort to terminate the Grant Pass Library lease. He was then kicked out, and that left another vacancy. So We had two new commissioners who were on the board at the time, Ron Smith and Chris Barnett. They ended up picking Andreas Bleck to fill that empty seat because he had already been on the board before, at least as an appointee.
And they were coming in fresh.
Yeah, so they didn't know as much about county government and stuff. And so they wanted someone who at least had a little bit of board experience. But he ended up kind of taking over a lot of county operations for a while. He had some sole oversight over some employee HR stuff for a little bit. He approved this voluntary resignation program and made it more difficult for the library to renegotiate its lease after it was terminated. And, you know, people got mad and frustrated once again, and a group of voters organized another recall campaign the year after, this time against Bleck and Chris Barnett. They collected enough signatures by December of last year, and then Bleck chose to resign instead of face an election, and then Barnett chose the election, and we know already that he was also overwhelmingly voted out.
Okay, so that's the drama to how we got to here. What about the temporary board? I thought Oregon law said the governor got to fill vacancies. Like
yeah.
This.
So this temporary board was actually created by voters back in the 90s. There was actually an instance when the governor filled vacancies on the Josephine County Commission. I was actually trying to figure out what exactly happened there, but I can't find any old newspapers or anything that describes what happened.
You've got
to
go to the library there and
go through
some stacks.
Let me know.
Stacks.
Give me a call. Exactly. But voters in this heavily Republican district, the governor was Democrat. They didn't like that. So they passed a charter amendment that changed the appointment process. So if there are two or more vacancies on the board, you know, meaning the board can't appoint its own replacement, then the power instead transfers to this temporary board, and that keeps that power in the county. This is actually the first time this has ever been implemented, so we've kind of learned a lot about how things work.
Yeah.
So, for example, in between mid-December and last Monday, we still had two commissioners on the board. Chris Barnett was still there, and they could have filled Bleck's empty seat, but Ron Smith said that he was going to be recusing himself from this whole appointment process because of intimidation and people trying to influence him. And so he basically denied the quorum needed to fill that vacancy. And so we've sort of just been waiting out the clock until Barnett was kicked out, until the temporary board can take over.
Okay. Well, thanks for catching us up there. So bring us back to Thursday, yesterday. What did the temporary board decide on?
Yeah, so they decided to fill both of the vacancies rather than just filling one and then letting the commission fill the other vacancy. Wally Hicks, the county legal counsel, said they have the legal authority to do that, and he felt that that would give the commissioners more authority and avoid it being challenged in the future, challenge the legitimacy of their positions. So they are going to open up applications, I think, today. We should see them open today, and they're going to be due on Sunday, February 8th. Then they're going to pick around 5 to 10 finalists and then interview them publicly on the 18th and then appoint the two people probably that same day and get sworn in the next day. So those people will serve just until next January because those seats will be filled by election and special election in November.
Okay. Yeah, so. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that whole selection process once it happens. Thanks so much, Roman. Justin, you also reported that Oregon counties are getting a pay bump from federal logging. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so the federal government is increasing the amount of logging revenue actually shared with some Oregon counties. So this comes from the 2026, this year's Department of Interior Appropriation Bill. And Oregon counties will now receive 75% of the revenue from timber harvests on federally managed O&C lands. Before that, it was a 50-50 split between counties and the federal government. And the Association of O&C Counties, they called this one of the most, if not the most significant achievement for O&C counties in the last 44 years. So pretty big deal.
Okay, so people who are not up on the lingo, can you tell us what are O&C lands?
So it stands for Oregon and California Railroad Revested Lands. And this is land the federal government purchased in Oregon a long time ago for railroads. It's kind of a checkerboard of federally managed forests across 18 Oregon counties, most of the lands in western Oregon counties. And that's more than 2 million acres of forest. The important thing here is that counties can't tax this land because it's federally owned or tax the timber harvest. So local governments really lose out financially. So in the 30s, Congress passed what's called the O&C Act, and that mandates timber harvesting, sustainable timber harvesting on O&C lands. And the revenue from that is shared with counties to pay for public services. Until recently, that was split down the middle. Now counties with ONC lands will get some more.
And what are some of those public services?
Law enforcement. That's why I spoke to a county commissioner in Coos County, and he said that's where they're really struggling right now. He's looking for to put that extra funds in the sheriff's department.
Okay, thanks, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.